from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Support for the legislature today is provided by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Learn more at aarp.org/WV. The Charleston Gazette Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest news, traffic, and weather alerts, keeping you in the know while you're on the go. Lumos Networks, online at lumosnetworks.com. Marshall University, with more than 100 degree programs offered in 4 locations and online. More about the Marshall family at marshall.edu. Orion Strategies, professional public relations, government affairs, creative services, and research and polling, with offices in Charleston, Buchanan, Martinsburg, Pittsburgh, and Columbus.
And welcome to the legislature today from the State Capitol building. I'm Suzanne Higgins. And since it's Friday, that means we're joined by veteran State House reporters. We have Jake Zuckerman of the Charleston Gazette Mail, Brad McElhenney of West Virginia Metro News, and Ryan Quinn also from the Gazette Mail. Thank you guys for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
The first full week of this legislative session, it began with the resignation of a state senator who has decided to run for the presidency, and his replacement to represent Logan County was sworn in and assigned to his committees this afternoon or this morning. So tell us what we know about Senator Ojeda's departure and what we know about Senator Paul Hardesty.
One bit of intrigue was that Ojeda was firing shots at Hardesty before he was even named. On the way out, Ojeda's resignation letter referenced directly, "I hope the governor doesn't pick a lobbyist. I hope he doesn't pick his friend." And so
Senator Hardesty has been lobbying up to this point.
Was a lobbyist for the governor's private business, the Greenbrier Resort, and was listed as a lobbyist for some of other justices' other businesses. And that part is not quite clear to me, but it's somebody that the governor has known very well and has had a business relationship with, now taking that seat representing counties in southern West Virginia.
And Senator Ojeda was quite disgruntled when he left. I mean, he made his feelings known, and it really was interesting that he tried to have such a hand, such a role in his successor.
Yeah, you know, it's weird that he took up such an issue with something that he had absolute control of, you know, whether or not there would be a successor. But, you know, he's always been full of intrigue. He came in right after this really malicious assault against him, and he's always just drawn so much attention, first for forcing or getting this medical marijuana program through that no one saw coming, and then he was just a magnet for attention during the teacher strike. Then on his way out, he said, "I think this Paul Hardesty guy's gonna come here and I don't trust it," and then turned out to be entirely correct, but it's a device of his own doing. And then, as Ryan reported today, he actually attempted to unresign or something of that ilk that maybe you wanna...
Yeah, he apparently called the Senate Minority Leader, Roman Prezioso, and asked, "Can I rescind my resignation letter?"
Oh, wow.
And Prezioso basically said, "Go talk to Mitch Carmichael, the Senate President, Leader of the Republicans, because that's who you sent the resignation letter to. There's no precedent for this sort of issue." And then when I spoke to Ojeda, he said, "I'm not going to talk to Carmichael because I don't think Carmichael is going to help me out on this." And he said that he was very upset that the governor had picked his, up until that moment, lobbyist to be his successor. And he, He said that even if he had gotten his position back as a senator, he would not have ended his presidential run.
Well, you know, I do want to say that I've talked to, and Senator Hardesty is a member of the minority party. He is very well received among sitting senators within his the Democratic caucus, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, they came out with a news release right away last night saying we welcome him, we intend to work with him. You know, Hardesty, for his part, came in saying, I think, the right things about the district he represents. It's a district that's been hit really hard with economic struggles over the last few years, and that is what his intended emphasis is. And, you know, we asked him, this is temporary, and the seat is up in 2020. Do you intend to run for it again? And he says he does.
Okay, well, now let's go on to some policy movement this week, this very first week. Last night, a really interesting meeting in Senate Finance about the Senate Bill 1, which is the Community and Technical College Bill. And a very interesting exchange between the minority leader, Senator Prezioso, and the chancellor of the CTC system, Sarah Tucker. And we'll take a listen to that now.
You'd have no objection if we would include the four-year institutions that have an associate degree?
I mean, it depends on how much money you're willing to allocate.
You shouldn't have any deal with the money. That's our responsibility. I'm just asking you philosophically, would you have a problem with adding associate degrees in four-year regional institution?
The way that the bill is currently set up, there has to be associate degree, up to an associate degree, in a high need program.
Because we're all in this thing together. We want a better trained workforce. We want a highly skilled workforce. We want business to bloom. We want to give our students the ability to get as much education as they can. That helps the total environment in the state. So you would have no objection.
The other thing that could be an interesting way to work with the 4 years in this bill is to think about, or in any bill, frankly, is to think about ways to encourage transfer and articulation agreements.
Well,
there were less than 2,000 students last year that transferred from a four-year to a four-year, from a two-year to a two-year, from a two-year to a four-year, and back again.
Well, that's better than zero.
It's better than zero, but we need better pathways there.
Exactly right. We need pathways that totally encompass a systemic education pathway, not just for one entity.
Yep.
And so this, of course, is a scholarship program, and we hear that the minority wants to broaden. Right now, it's specifically for the CTC system. They're asking questions about expanding that scholarship assistance program to the larger four-year universities. So what are we thinking, that there'll be amendments on the floor to that? I'm getting the feeling that there will be.
Senator Prezioso said today, I'd called him up to ask him, because after that moment where he tried to elicit out of the chancellor of the CTCI system support for something that she didn't seem to be willing to outright say she supported, which is expanding the free community college tuition bill to not just cover free tuition for community colleges, but to also pay for those few associate's degrees that are offered by the four-year system. I think at Fairmont State, possibly at Bluefield State College as well, and basically expand the bill so you could get free tuition to attend those as well. Prezioso says that he wants to push that as an amendment on the floor. Said that he didn't do it before it passed out of Senate Finance last night, because when they reconvened, all the Republicans were there and apparently some Democrats were missing, and he said this is an exercise in futility, just going to wait to hash it out on the floor. And he also wants to push some sort of amendment to possibly add some sort of recognition, it's kind of unclear, of federally funded apprenticeship programs, and maybe even take out to some extent the drug testing requirement. But that last one, he's really not sure about.
All right, and let's just keep going with the with the education focus. Brad, I saw you just a few minutes ago talking to the president of the West Virginia Education Association, Dale Lee. At this point, what's he saying, thinking? Where's that?
You know, yeah, that's one of the great things about doing your work up where everybody mingles is people will plop down beside you and tell you what
they're
thinking.
I see what next story you're working on.
You know, one of the issues I was asking him was Monday, Martin Luther King Day is observed, and last year, Ryan and I both wound up at a rally of teachers down in the rotunda, and everybody, the cafeteria is closed on Martin Luther King Day here, so I was almost ready to exit the Capitol last year to go get my lunch, and the teachers were gathered. I thought, I'll just turn around and go look and see what they say, and what I hear them say is the word walkout, and I'm thinking, surely they're not talking about striking, and in that moment I went over to Dale Lee and I said, I heard the word walkout. Is that a serious thing that you guys are talking about? And now we know what happened. Well, it's going to be Martin Luther King Day again on Monday, and I said, are you expecting a rally? Will you have a lot of people here? And I don't think that they plan to have quite the sheer number of people they had for that event last year that really kicked off this situation. It sounds like what they're going to have next week is they're going to invite some teachers in, and they're going to go talk to the delegates or the senators from their districts. Certainly, they're going to talk about the pay raises that have been advocated for, the charter schools bill, that kind of thing, some enhancement of the workforce training, that kind of thing. But I don't know that teachers are stirred up enough yet that you're going to see.
Well, let me go to the clip. We had the state superintendent of schools before his budget hearing this week, and he's talking about the need for 700 teachers and some of the things that they're thinking about to encourage math teachers particularly. Let's take a listen to that.
One area we'd like to expand would be to grow your own math teacher. I've seen a program where you can earn your associate degree while you're in high school, take all of your math content, take 2 years after high school in college, West Virginia University or any four-year institution that offers teacher preparation programs, graduate perhaps at the age of 20, commit 5 years to service in West Virginia, and maybe rework the Smith Underwood Scholarship so that in some way we could incentivize kids to go into that profession. We have right now approximately 25% of our Algebra 1 classrooms that are taught by non-Algebra 1 certified teachers. That's unacceptable. That's not emerged over time, or right away, I'm sorry, it's emerged over time. We also have in Math 1, which is an integrated math approach, algebra, geometry included, about 25% more of those classrooms taught by non-certified. And the same holds true, I think it's a little less for geometry teachers. We have a crisis, and we need to do something to attract more kids into the math teaching profession.
Okay, Ryan, I'm going to throw that to you. The differential pay, Brad was just talking about, reminding lawmakers how things were just a year ago. How much of a fight do you think the differential pay might be among rank and file members?
It depends on whether it's put with other things into a bill that includes the main pay raise bill. But I think it's going to be a fight nonetheless. And it's something that unions generally oppose differential pay. And it also depends on the level of differential pay that's backed. State superintendent has backed something minimal in the past, a one-time stipend. Carmichael, according to Metro News, may want to go further. And others may want to go further even than that.
All right, I'm going to move on. I want to ask Jake about an update on the medical marijuana bill, not the bill, but the law, and some of the bills that are out there to tweak that law. Where are we a week into session with that?
Sure. Well, right now we have a program that launches in July, except all the treasurer's vendors have said that we're not comfortable touching this money because of the discord with federal law. And so there's kind of been this running around series of what are we going to do, where are we going to put this money. And the idea we seem to have landed on is a credit union bill. And this is a big priority for the House Democrats vis-a-vis Delegate Mike Pushkin from Kanawha County. And he thinks that credit unions are willing to accept the risk. And just last week, the Attorney General put out an opinion. And his opinion gives a soft green light to the legislature. It essentially says this might be federally illegal, except the federal government, through the Treasury and through the DOJ, has kind of given us these okays and wink, wink, nudge, nudge advice on how to do this. And the DOJ cannot use federal funds to prosecute medicinal marijuana businesses that are legal under state law. So it seems like enough of a go-ahead for a bill to run through, and it seems like credit unions are going to be the pathway forward. And given how soundly medical marijuana passed in 2017 and support from leadership in the House and Senate and the governor as far as a banking fix, it looks like that should move pretty cleanly.
And you mentioned Delegate Pushkin in the House, and he has gone beyond, of course, the medical marijuana law this session to want to start a very serious discussion and push the legalization of recreational use of cannabis. Tell us about that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, recreational, it's on the table now. We've heard it from Democratic Minority Leader Tim Miley. We've heard it from Mike Pushkin. I know we've heard opposition from the governor and the Speaker of the House and the Senate president, so I wouldn't hold your breath on it this year, but then again, everyone said that about medical marijuana in 2017. But, you know, sometimes it takes a few years for these things to get through. People have to warm up to the idea, so that seems to be at least the direction things are going on a national scale and in West Virginia.
I feel like don't hold your breath is some sort of don't inhale joke. I didn't inhale.
Well, don't hold your breath. Earlier in the week, our reporter, Dave Mistich, reported on some leverage that the House Democrats are trying to use. They're proposing that if you consider this and allow this to start moving through the recreational use bill, then they could feasibly get behind a repeal of the business inventory tax. And we had a couple of the lawmakers talking about that. Have you heard any of that? Because, of course, with the repeal of the business tax, there will be a dearth in funds to public education on the county levels. And they were saying that it's estimated that the recreational revenue from recreational use would be $80-90 million, and that could be earmarked in place of the business inventory tax.
I've heard that kind of deal described. I don't have a feel for how serious it is, but because the business inventory tax is a property tax, it's embedded in the Constitution, so you've got to have two-thirds majorities in each House to pass out something like that to go to a vote of the public. So you're going to need Democrats. So it stands to reason they'd be looking for some kind of deal if they really want to get it done.
To that point, I'd add that I'd like to see the math behind it. I'm really wondering if you're talking about with the business and property tax, about $140 million off the base budget. I can't imagine recreational marijuana bringing in that much revenue. I mean, I'm open to the math, but something about it sounds off.
And the business and inventory tax repeal, I mean, that would ultimately go to a vote of the people. And you just have to question at this point, is there an appetite to roll back taxes that largely go to large corporations? I don't know. I don't know. Well, this week also saw a handful of bills pass through both the House and Senate. First, in the House, lawmakers passed House Bill 2164, which would ensure that appeals before the state Supreme Court are a matter of right, is a right for citizens. And I don't think, well, some people don't even realize that you can't automatically appeal to the Supreme Court.
Sure, well, I'll jump in. I mean, since 2011, the court has been acting under a rule that says there are automatic repeals, and rules have a force of law, but they can change with any court. So this is the House's way of really establishing that and hoping the Senate does so. And I wouldn't divorce it entirely from the intermediate court issue, because if there's concern that West Virginians don't have enough of an appellate right in this state, this could be an expression of really solidifying the court's decision to make that a rule, that you do, yes, you do, in fact, always have a right to appeal a decision from a circuit court.
How did the Supreme Court do in front of their budget presentations this week?
I found it fascinating just based on the context and the sort of interpersonal dynamics. You know, Chief Justice Beth Walker, who was the only one of all of them who went through an impeachment trial in the Senate this morning, she was appearing before the Senate, the House Finance Committee, and one of the delegates said, "It's a pleasure to see you today. Thank you for being here." And she said, "Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Really, thank you." So, I mean, there was some funniness to it, but you know, she really acknowledged this constitutional amendment that did pass through a vote of the people just this last year, giving the legislature greater oversight of the Supreme Court's budget and the judicial budget as a whole. And she said, you know, "We recognize that you've got that power now, and we want to be as open and transparent as we can so that you trust us."
And they did, I believe, propose a budget that's $7-8 million less than last year. So I think they're trying to show that they're, you know, reining things in.
And the other interesting thing I thought was that, at least this morning, every justice on the Supreme Court showed up for that budget hearing, which hasn't been the case in the past, so kind of showing a unified front.
Over on the Senate side, Senate Bill 24 was one of the first bills that got all the way through and is now over in the House. And that brought to light that when all the public employees last year got their pay raises, that local county boards of health did not. And let's just take a quick listen to Senator Ron Stallings of Boone County, who is a physician, and he spoke to the bill.
"I was heartbroken last year that these folks, we didn't go back and backfill them, so they did not receive the raise that other folks did last year. At the same time, they're having to do more and more work with the, you know, the hepatitis A outbreak, foodborne, as well as the opioid issues with bloodborne hepatitis, as well as the increase in HIV, AIDS, and STDs. So if there ever there was a group of people overworked and underpaid, it's these folks. We've had to cut their budgets in the past. They're on a shoestring budget still, but certainly for all that they do for public health in West Virginia, we deserve and they deserve, and we need to get them out of purgatory."
I mean, he brings up a lot of public health concerns, and we're again spiking in hepatitis C, and just how much of the health concerns that local public health officials are dealing with. But it also brings into the bigger the bigger issue of pay raises and where are those what the governor has proposed just 10 days into session now.
I mean, the trick is, it's a trick of budgeting, but when the governor says public employees are going to get a 5% pay raise, it's easy to do for employees who are paid out of the general fund, but so many agencies are paid out of other buckets that are special revenue that include fees, tuition, money from the federal government, and that's where it becomes tricky for him to guarantee that they're going to get 5% pay raises. So you saw, for example, the colleges say, "Well, we've been asked to give a pay raise, but we don't actually have the money."
Mm-hmm. I want to go around the table and just ask the three of you, what's your give us the scoop. What are you focused on? Your next story, maybe this weekend, coming up next week. What do you think you'll be following? Ryan, we'll begin with you.
Well, start off with trying to explain what's coming as far as amendments to the community and technical college bill, and figure out whether it's got any chance of passing in the House, because it got through the Senate before rather quickly last session. The House never took it up. The other thing I'm expecting is for the hammer to fall as far as all of these education overhauls, education savings account, charter schools, all these sort of things could be introduced next week. Perhaps as one bill, perhaps as many separate ones.
All right, we'll be following that. Brad?
You know, you asked last week, what issue do you think will be on the horizon that you hadn't anticipated? Governor Justice just had an almost throwaway line about we're going to divert some money to maintain secondary roads. And it got him a big round of applause. And this week, that issue just took off with citizens coming to the Capitol to say, we do want the secondary roads to be fixed, but we don't want road bond money to be used to do it. And Senator Randy Smith and others took up that cause, with Smith in particular saying, I've got Randy's dream, that's to fix the roads. And lawmakers of both sides have told me this week that the number one issue that they get call after call after call about from their constituents is please fix the roads.
All right, and Jake, we have about a minute. What's your next story?
The turbo version of the story would be the intermediate courts bill. It's been a big push from the Senate especially. It's been a repeated year after year push, and the thinking was last year it didn't really pass because the teacher strike took up all the air in the room. Although I've talked to a lot of conservative House members who are really not as on board as one might think.
All right, and that's in the paper tomorrow?
Sunday?
Okay, we'll be watching. Jake Zuckerman, Brad McElhenney, and Ryan Quinn, thank you guys for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Monday on the Legislature Today, local Martin Luther King Jr. remembrances and a conversation with the president of the State Board of Education. I'm Suzanne Higgins. For everyone here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, thanks for watching. Have a great weekend.